Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is December 17th, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, the ground is shifting under our feet, so it's good news for me that I'm going to be out and about. Helps me understand better what's happening. I'm leaving Monday to drive to New Hampshire with a stop in Pennsylvania to see family for Christmas, and then on to Rhode Island, where the skunk works for the wrap-up begins, and I'll be there until January 6th. Our annual wrap-up, we're also going to publish our poster for 2016, and the name is Space Here We Go, with a great section on the space-based economy. Throughout 2016, I hope you will have an excellent introduction and framework for what you need to understand about the space-based economy as it begins to unfold before us. And on January 26th, I'll then head back to Tennessee, and then I'm out to Marin County in California in the San Francisco Bay Area for the Architects of the New Paradigm Conference on January 16th, 17th, and then I'll be in Marietta, Ohio for the Economic Roundtable of the Ohio Valley. Again, I'm working on plans to be in Australia and Europe from May through August. I'm looking at Australia, Scotland, France, Germany, and Switzerland. If the emerging markets turn up, I'm also hoping to make it to Singapore and Hong Kong in the fall, but we'll have to see. I will just keep you posted as I continue to work on that. April 30th at the 21 Club with Richard Dolan in New York. I want to keep reminding you of that. It was such an amazing event last year. It's going to be the same. He's working on a book on false flags, and I think you'll really enjoy it. We have gotten some great input from testers on our new website and decided to implement some of that their recommendations, so it's going to push us a little bit later into January. So just stay tuned, and I'm very excited about it. At last, it's we're going to have that new site. There are a lot of things we want to do better for you, and we really hope you like it. Our theme tonight is the Fed pulls the trigger. They finally did it. They raised interest rates 25 basis points this week and indicated their goal was to raise steadily through next year, presumably a quarter for a 1% raise next year. So 25 basis points is, there are 100 basis points in 1%, so it's a quarter of 1%. Who wins is savers, pension funds, insurance companies, people who manage retirement money. Who loses is dollar borrowers all around the world. This is going to raise the dollar and then raise the price of getting and borrowing dollars. And that's particularly going to hurt those whose revenues depend on commodities. You have a lot of companies consolidate their earnings from abroad, and it makes it tougher for them. The U.S. dollar index is back up. It was over 99 today. The market was up. The equity markets were up yesterday, back down again today. Oil's really clocked back down at 34. If you look at the technicals, we're a little bit in uncharted territory, but we could easily hit 29, 28 if it breaks that 38 line, which it appears to do. The rising interest rates, I believe, is the right thing to do. Zero interest rates has produced massive misallocation of capital. It's penalized savers and promoted more centralization. The fact that the Fed is raising interest rates signals the end of really a monetary policy that for the last 7 years is designed to facilitate the financial coup d'etat. So to one sense, this is the coup is now over. It's also the end of a 35-year plus great bond bull market in which global finances were bubbled by cheap government debt. So if you're an American, you've basically been part of a party that started at the end of World War II, and that party is now coming to an end. This is so big and has gone on for so long, it's very hard for people to fathom a reality other than the one that cheap government debt creates. It's very interesting. After when I was in the middle of litigation, I said to myself, you know, I'm going to adopt a lifestyle and live in a manner that I would live if it had ended, because when it ends, I want to be in the right place, not the wrong place. And one way of thinking about the financial coup d'etat was that it happened in anticipation of this transition. They wanted to get all their money out at the top. In the short run, it is contributing to a crash in commodities. It's part of the global slowdown, including oil and gas. The oil card is also at play. And as we watch falling oil prices and the resulting devastation in the oil and gas sector and the related junk market. How long this is going to go on is very much going to depend on the drumbeats of war and whether they continue or not, because war only contributes to more global deflation and slowdown. In recent weeks, it has become obvious that the ISIS is flowing oil to Israel at below market prices, among other things, so Israel can forsake Russian supplies. It wouldn't surprise me if that was one of the reasons for what happened in San Bernardino is basically whiting out that story that is now pretty much bubbling all over the globe. The reality is that even at $34 a barrel, Russia has not been brought to their knees. They're not even close. Which means the neocon strategy is going to have to inflict a lot more pain if it has any chance of working, and I don't know that it does. It really comes down to who's got what space weapons, to be blunt. What it has managed to do is to wreck a great deal of what is left of U.S. credibility, Brett Stevens wrote in a Wall Street Journal editorial this week. Quote, "The central foreign policy challenge facing the next president of the United States is how to reestablish American credibility with friends who no longer trust us and enemies who no longer fear us." Very, very important statement. I'm going to put it up on the website as a quote du jour, but let me read it to you again because I really think it's important to understand this. The central foreign policy challenge facing the next president of the United States is how to reestablish American credibility with friends who no longer trust us and enemies who no longer fear us. The zoo story, consisting of Donald Trump, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Hillary Clinton, and the San Bernardino events over the last 2 weeks, trumpeted to the world that America is in deep trouble and does not have a cohesive leadership that is up to the challenge. We are flying on a sea of false flags, bizarre media, and entrainment. While the polls say it's working, the smart money doesn't. I assure you that raising interest rates 25 basis points will not attract back the capital that decided over the last 2 weeks that it was time to shift investment and operations away from America because America lacks adult supervision. In one sense, the Fed raised interest rates on the monetary side of the house to attract capital being pushed away by temper tantrums, infighting, and entropy on the fiscal side of the house. And so the multiple personality disorder of our culture continues to blossom before our eyes and inspires us to take a different path. If you're on this call, I know you and I are on a different path. Money and markets. There's no better sign of deflation than what's happening at the universities. I have gotten numerous emails over the last month from people who work in academia or involved with universities in a whole variety of ways. And it was clear to me that they had very little of the basic understandings they need to understand what's happening. More than a couple times in the last month, somebody said to me, "What's a control file?" And I realized, whoa, you are not safe in this environment unless you know how to navigate it. To navigate it, you need to understand what's going on, including the fact that the pots of money at universities are huge. These are big, big businesses. Not just the money rolling through the income statement, but the endowments and assets. And so I decided we would just do a special. I called up John Rappaport and said, would you help me do a special? We'll call it Beat Down at U.S. Universities. And John agreed, and we jumped on and did one for subscribers and put up a lot of the links you need to know. There's a professor from UC Davis who's done a very good job of sort of outing the game. We put up that video as well as the video of Norm Dodd's really amazing interview with Ed Griffith many years ago about sort of how the tax-exempt model works and how endowments work and work in the United States. If you have a loved one, someone you care about or close to who's at a university, feel free to share that with them. I think it really can help them navigate their environment. We put the charts up on Monday in Money and Markets for December 11th. So it was closing December 11th last Friday. And I pointed out that the only thing going up was long treasuries, intermediate treasuries in New Zealand. It's amazing how many people want to get a hideaway in New Zealand. But under the category of if you thought you had a bad year, I pointed out that even though oil and gas is down 75% in the last 18 months. Peabody coal. Coal is really doing badly. Last week we saw the the last coal mine in England shut down. Can you imagine that? The coal that fueled the Industrial Revolution is now, all the mines are gone. Peabody Energy is down 92% year to date. Can you imagine? That is a really bad year. Okay, so let's take a look at how the markets did. The S&P, which was flat for the year as of end of the day Wednesday, closed down today. It's down less than 1%. It's down 0.83%. Again, my prediction is we'll close flat for the year. Let's look at the fixed income markets and their response. The bond aggregate is now down 1.79% for the year. The long treasury way back up. It's down 2.68% for the year. Intermediates are flat. It's the one thing I've got to talk about that's not down in dollar terms. Junk market down almost 13%. The German DAX is doing surprisingly well. It's now up 10% for the year, but that's in euros and dollar terms. With the dollar flying, it's now down 4.5%. China, the large China caps, down 14%. Although China's had a good month, particularly the internet stocks for the last month. The developed world down 3%. Emerging markets down 16.5%. Gold down 11.5%. Silver down 13%. Oil down 51%. And as I said before, in the last 18 months, it's down 75%. The commodities index down 25.25%. The U.S. dollar index now up 9% for the year. It's the last time I checked, it was 98.96, but it touched over 99 today. So it looks like there's no Santa Claus rally unless we get somewhat of a miracle starting next week. I think the S&P will be flat for the year. Buyers are better off waiting. Usually you get a January dip because everybody's been selling into the December. So I'm looking to, I think buyers are going to be looking to buy value, and you're going to find value in things that have bottomed and turned. So it's probably going to be Europe, emerging markets and frontier markets, and hopefully commodities. So buyers are definitely going to be looking for value and looking for things that can succeed in this environment, which is not everything. You're going to see a lot of companies that are not going to make it. Very interesting debate right now in Congress. The oil and gas producers, the oil producers, would love to be able to export. And one editorial in the Journal this week basically said, if Congress will allow them to export, there are a lot of companies that will make it. If they can't export, they're not going to make it. So it'll be very interesting to see what Congress does. The climate change deal is now final. I posted a copy of the draft posted, or the final copy posted by the United Nations. It's hard to say really what it is and how bad it is until I have a chance to study and see how a lot of people who know a lot more about this, what they dig out. Of course, a lot of it is going to be in the implementation. I do think it's very, very important. So again, if you see links or information on it, keep me posted. Another thing that's very important is it now looks like Congress is going to pass the IMF reforms that the Republicans have been sitting on since 2010. That's going to raise the status of the BRICS, Brazil, China, India, and Russia. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Europeans want that group on board to approve and deal with what they're doing in Europe. I posted a link to a discussion of a video posted at the Kurzweil Singularity site. It's a conversation about artificial intelligence moving much faster than a lot of people expected. And one of the speakers promoting the idea of an annual stipend. I wanted to say something about this because we all need to be aware of the politics here. The more government control of your income statement and your balance sheet that they have, it's a very bad idea. The problem is not AI, although I think AI is going to just do revolutionary things to how the economy works and what we do and how we do it. So there's no doubt we're going through a pretty amazing change and transition. But the big problem is centralized rigging and the way government policies have been applied. So it's a much bigger and longer conversation, but beware the idea of complete dependency on checks running through a federal government budget. I think we need to stop the centralized rigging instead of instituting federally funded serfdom. a story in Business Week, and the latest Business Week on Theranos, something, a company, a testing company, that medical testing company that I've talked about at the request of subscribers and wrote a commentary on. You can read it after you log in on the website. The Business Week story was more than bizarre. It left out some of the most damaging information about Theranos' history and what's going on there. If you read my commentary, you'll understand more. So it's not clear what the real story is or why they're doing this, but if you look at who's on the board, it's a who's who of the military-industrial complex, and it's a reminder that you want to be very careful about who you give your blood, your DNA, or any other part of your physicality or healthcare data about your physicality, because I would love to know what these guys are planning on doing with the blood and DNA they get a hold of. And you want to be very, very careful, not only who you give it to, but what the regulations are that that they are subject to and who's enforcing that. It is another one of many reasons why I continue to look for places both here and abroad which can provide healthcare services on a much more safe basis than the general system, and certainly the system that's being developed. True confessions, I've now spent in 2015 about 100 hours studying medical tourism, reading books on medical tourism, reading articles and books on insurance and healthcare systems in countries where a lot of expats go. And I still haven't figured out a way to organize a series of Salieri reports on the topic of where do we go to get health services that I felt was really credible. And it's something I'm going to continue to work on in 2016. But for heaven's sakes, if you have ideas or recommendations, please let me know. I do think medical tourism and foreign healthcare systems are going to be increasingly important to many people in this country. Our hero this week is Scott Tipps, who's the head of the National Health Federation. If you look at our Christmas card, you can link to it from the blog. What you'll see is every year we make donations at Christmas time. And we make donations throughout the year, but Christmas time is a special time to sit down and say, okay, who's really special? Who would we like to promote? Who would we like to thank? And the National Health Federation is one of them. It has a great health freedom news. If you become a member, you get four health freedom news throughout the year. They do a quarterly, and it's excellent. Very, very good. It's as one of our team said, it's the best $35 you'll ever spend. But one of the reasons I wanted to bring up the subject of Christmas donations, now's the time of year to think about giving back and thanking others. I think it's a very important thing to do at Christmas time. And a lot of people say to me, well, I had a bad year and I have no money. And the reality is, even if you have no money, let's say you have a dollar of spare change this year, you can take 10 cents from that and give it to someone. I was always shocked and amazed when I was during the litigation. I was going to church in many communities with people who have hardly a penny to their name. And you'd get an old church mother who'd come up and put a quarter or a dollar in your hand and say, honey, I'm praying for you. I'm rooting for you. And the quarter, the dollar wasn't, you know, they knew it wasn't a lot of money, but it was a prayer. It was a way of saying, you know, my prayers are real and concrete. I really want you to succeed. So even if you can only send $5 or $10, I have to tell you that when you send something that says, I'm thinking about you, I appreciate you, I'm rooting for you, and, you know, and here's my 10%, I'm a great believer in tithing, you know, it makes a difference. So don't be ashamed if you don't have a lot. Just sit down and say, who do I want to give thanks for? And because I know they'll appreciate it. And with that in mind, we're going to extend our Give the Gift, which is every subscriber can give a gift of a complimentary subscription that will last through the end of January. So we're going to keep it open until New Year's Eve, and you can link to it on the website, but just send the name and email address of the person who you want to get a Give the Gift or a complimentary subscription thanks to you. And we'll make sure to take care of it. So they'll enjoy that for through the end of January. Ask Catherine. You all have been sending some great links. And I think you'll see if you look at our top picks that we've been posting, almost all of them. It's really great stuff. You all have an eye for the real news. Some questions, though. If the citizens of the United States were the ones voting on all the proposed legislation instead of Congress being the ones to vote, do you think that we'd end up with a better government for the people, or do you think that things would get worse? I think we would end up with a much better government. It would be certainly a messy process, particularly at first. The key to having it work would be the right kinds of financial framework and supporting analytics and process design. If you look at the some of the different processes used for things like Wikipedia or used for the internet protocols, there's a lot of work that's been done in this area. And I think it's very important to integrate the authorizing committee and legislations with appropriations and how that's done. But I think, and of course you're going to have, and I keep beating this drum, you're going to have place-based financial data. So you're going to have to bring the analytics back so you can see how things work. And what's going to happen over time is it's going to cause a revolution in what rules are applied. And to me, the trickiest thing about getting it done these days is, as long as the telecoms and intelligence agencies are free to use mind control and entrainment technology and to run around and kill people, you know, with impunity, the question is, how do you, if you can use entrainment technology to turn every participant into a zombie, then it's not going to work. So I think the issue it's going to bring up again is how do we cleanse our media of covert forces? Okay, second question. With Mark Zuckerberg and his wife announcing that they'll be giving approximately $45 billion away to charity, do you think these donations will mostly be given to organizations that will support the agenda of Mr. Global? Of course. Of course, that's what I think. First of all, Zuckerberg and his wife are not giving it away. They're putting it in an LLC they will control. It will be invested as they direct, but, in my opinion, it's going to be directed by the syndicate. Zuckerberg is just a front. So, yes, it'll be an LLC version of the Gates Foundation. Hi, Catherine. I hope this finds you healthy and happy. And this one goes on to warn me about the Saker. There's a great website that covers sort of Russia and the Ukraine, and now has been covering Syria. It's the Vineyard of the Saker, and Saker has agreed to join us on the Saleri Report. And so I'll be recording him in January, and he'll run it sometime in January and in February. And I want to thank you for that comment. It was really useful. Okay. We don't have a Let's Go to the Movies today, but I wanted to recommend again that you watch the Rorker trilogy in combination with the interview that we did this week. And in fact, it wasn't a normal interview. We tried something. I asked Junius if he would be the host of a panel on Home and Square. I'm very concerned that Home and Square is the prototype for domestic rendition centers. If you're going to have to re-engineer state and local federal government, it makes a lot of sense that the feds would, one, want to take over the local cops, and two, have tools available to do domestic rendition. It would make re-engineering the budgets much easier, as would bringing in the guns. So that's why I continue to beat the drums that don't let them pull in the guns. Gun freedom is very, very important. And we certainly don't want domestic rendition centers. I mean, this really gets down to who's at the table when you're going to re-engineer the finances, whether they're federal, state, or local, and whether laws are going to be respected or not. And I hate to say it, but I think it's very, very important that that sovereignty, individual sovereignty, be protected and municipal sovereignty be protected. And we're going to have to do that. Force is going to be at play on both sides. And I think we're just going to have to respect that these are very serious risks. It was a great discussion. We had Cynthia McKinney join us. And among other things, Cynthia I didn't expect it, but Cynthia talked at the end about how she is thinking seriously about running for Congress again, which I have to say would be remarkable and wonderful for all of us. And I will certainly call upon the Soleri readers and subscribers to help that in whatever way they can. If you haven't seen the video that I showed in both Secret Space Program presentations that included Cynthia grilling Donald Rumsfeld about $2.3 trillion missing from the Department of Defense, it's a great classic. The Worker Trilogy is a series done by the BBC. The last two, it's three movies, the last two done in 2014. And it discusses sort of the evolution of the war on terror and the global rendition centers and the financing thereof. And sort of the corruption that grew up around that. And it's along with the Guardian story on Homan Square in Chicago, it's part of a real trend in the British media to hold the U.S. accountable for the drift to totalitarianism. It's quite interesting. Anyway, so a great interview with Junius and Cynthia McKinney, and let's just hope that Cynthia really does decide to run for Congress again. Well, this is it. This is it for 2015. Christmas is now upon us. It's one of my favorite times of the year. Our Christmas schedule is up on the website. We're going to post on December 24th, as we do every year, the great essay from the Wall Street Journal, In Hoc Domini, Vermont Royster's essay on Christ and freedom. So it's also published in our prayer book. So we have extra copies. We made physical copies. So if you would like a physical copy, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, and this is for the whole prayer book, at Soleri, P.O. Box 157, Hickory Valley, Tennessee, and I will send them to you while they last. As we do each year for the next 2 weeks, the two last weeks of the year, we reach into the year and pull out the best of the year for you. And so next week, we're going to have the geopolitics, the best of 2015, some of our favorite interviews, including Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson and Cynthia McKinney and Ann Wames, and some great stuff. Then December 31st, we will review all the wrap-ups. We're going to put up links to the January 2015 wrap-up, and then first quarter planet debt, second quarter infrastructure, third quarter Chinese stock market. Again, the purpose of the wrap-ups is to make sure you have a framework and an overview of what's going on, so that if you only read the wrap-ups, you would be a highly informed citizen, certainly much better informed than if you watch the TV news. So those are great things to review coming into the annual wrap-up. And then, of course, January 7th, 2016, we're going to have our 2015 annual wrap-up and publish it with our 2016 poster. And as I said, the poster is great. It's space. Here we go. Our next money in markets will be on January 14th. So keep sending your questions and I'll respond to them then, which we'll be doing with the equity overview. But remember, we'll be posting the Friday close chart every week throughout this period. So if you're interested in tracking the markets despite the holidays, just check in with the money in market charts. So until January 7th, when I join you with a wrap-up, I wish you the merriest of Christmases. I wish you a happy new year and a happy holiday season. As we close the year, I just wanted to say how grateful I am for all you've done for me and for the Soleri team during 2015. Every day we are amazed and inspired by your intelligence, your courage, your heart, and your ability to invent your way through the environment that we are traveling together. I'm looking forward to 2016 in a way that I have rarely looked forward to the coming year. I get to travel the world, and I get to do it in cahoots with some of the best people on the planet. You never know the difference we can make, so let's just see what we cook up in 2016. And remember, as you look back over 2015 and make your plans for 2016, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.